This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Only on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine. Now, here are your hosts, Ryan Price and David Cruz.
Hi, welcome to Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. I'm Ryan Price, sitting here alongside David Cruz, and today we are very excited to let you listen in to a conversation that we had recently with Dr. Kitty Harris, who is Associate Professor of the Department of Community, Family, and Addiction Services at Texas Tech, also the director for the Center for the Study of Addiction and Recovery there on campus, and is doing just remarkable work in helping students who also happen to struggle with addiction to come through and recover and become what she says in the interview, who God created them to be.
I marvel at anybody like her that is a teacher, an educator, a mentor. I know I've had in my own life wonderful influences from teachers and mentors. I just think we undervalue and underappreciate the role that teachers and educators play in our lives. Their impact is immense.
Teachers show us the way to become what we're created to be, or to gain some sort of trade or skill or wisdom. And that's the word that I think prevails in this interview, to learn how to do life well.
It's a sacred calling. I once had a teacher, this is remarkable, when I was in the first grade, and she so impacted my life. I'll tell you a very brief little story. The day I became a priest in 1986, she was there in the Catholic cathedral where I was ordained. Funny thing is that she had never been to Catholic church, much less an ordination of a Catholic priest. But she taught me in the first grade many, many years before this. And I had given her a little plastic cowboy on a horse that had been on my birthday cake that my mother had made me. She remembered me telling her years and years back, Mrs. Waits, that was her name, this little cowboy and horse is for you. Ryan, would you believe 20-some-odd years later, on the day I became a priest, she gave me back that little cowboy and horse, which brought tears to my eyes because I thought she kept that all these years. God knows she taught countless of kids, and that she would remember one in particular, me, and hold on to something that I treasured, and then to give it back to me. I mean, that's just, the ordinary person doesn't think in those terms, but she was so thoughtful.
Teachers can make tremendous impact, certainly so with Dr. Harris in the particular work that she's doing. She talks a lot about people coming to find themselves and coming out of a dark place, addiction, and into the light. She talks about the idea that in those dark places, places of pain or shame, where when light comes in, that is the place that God finds us. The place of pain becomes the place of healing.
Terrific conversation.
Stay with us for this conversation with Dr. Kitty Harris. You are listening to Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, with your hosts Ryan Price and David Cruz. Brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
This is Ryan Price and David Cruz on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, and we are here today with our guest, Dr. Kitty Harris, who is director for the Center of the Study of Addiction and Recovery at Texas Tech. Kitty, we are glad that you are here with us.
You're welcome, Ryan. Thanks for inviting me.
Kitty, tell us about your work at Tech. I'm very interested about the program that's going on there and what you're doing.
Well, the Center for the Study of Addiction and Recovery is basically a peer-driven program to help students that are in recovery from substance abuse and eating disorders to be in a community of faith where they get support and nurturing and encouragement to continue in their recovery from their addictive disorders. We have about 90 students, and next year I hope we'll have 100. I think we're going to be able to grow a little bit more. And what we do is we allow the students to do everything from attend recovery meetings on campus to help them with their advising or their programs, to provide the kind of support they need to continue to make that decision each day to stay in recovery. The most important thing to think about is, can you imagine anything worse for your child that is recently out of treatment, in recovery for substance abuse or eating disorders, going to a college campus? I mean, it's just about the worst possible environment to be able to have to step back into. So what we do is we try to provide the opportunity to have a safe place for them where they are supported by their peers. That's the big piece. And we've looked at all the research that we've collected, and it's great that we do academic advising, and it's great that we have scholarships, and it's great that we, you know, encourage them. But the real piece is that sense of belonging, that real sense of affiliation with a group that's of like mind.
Connection, community,
Absolutely.
Sense of belonging to a group of people who are also walking that same road
that
you're walking.
That's
and
right.
How important that is.
That's been the most important piece that we have found. The other pieces are great, and they support our mission. But for them to be there with other students that are walking that same road, as you said, or struggling with the same issues.
I know the important role that the higher power plays in the 12-step program.
Absolutely.
How do you see that working out, not only at Tech and your students there, but just in your experience with recovery in general?
I think that if you read the recovery literature, you find that the one thing you can consistently say about recovery is that it's a spiritual-based journey. And it's the one thing that you can talk about different approaches, you can talk about different treatments, but the one consistent is that need to find a spiritual foundation. I think one of the things that we know is that our students that do the best, that typically have the most success, are students that are heavily involved in their own spiritual journey. Now, the difference is that we're not talking about a certain religion or a theological base. We're talking about belief in a power greater than yourself that most of them choose to call God, in which they are able to draw their strength, draw the help, draw the support in order to help them through the times that for many of them are incredibly, incredibly difficult. It's interesting because for all the things that people say about addiction and all the things you read and all the things that you may read or hear about recovery, one of the most interesting pieces is that those people that are in recovery and those people that have been successful with their recovery will always cite the grace of God in terms of giving credit for where they are today.
David, do you, in your experience as a pastor, how common is addiction and substance abuse in your field of work and encountering them? What do you say?
I think it's prevalent in just about every walk of life, although we deal with it when people come to seek comfort or direction or guidance. And I always find myself to be very limited with my skill set about what I can do, but I hope that I point people in the right direction to the resources that they need. It certainly impacts so many, many people in our society. Mm-hmm. Where do you find the spiritual wherewithal for yourself? Mm-hmm. Because you said the foundation of what you do kind of has these spiritual realities or connections or attributes. For you personally, what nourishes you? What motivates and inspires you to do the work you do from your soul?
Well, that's a great question. I think the answer for me, very candidly, is my own personal journey that has been that struggle, that has been that need to really rely on those resources and the willingness to do the things that I know to do on a daily basis that allow me to be able to access that strength, that determination, and that sense of going forward. I feel called to do this work. I feel like that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. There's a great website. It's called values.com. I don't know if you've ever looked at it, but it's put out by the Foundation for a Better Life. And I receive their quotes every morning. And one of the ones the other day was so good. It said, The two most important days in your life are the day that you were born and the day you realize why. And those were important days in my life. It is that the day came that I realized that this was the work I was supposed to do. It was a pretty rocky path to get there. I think because I feel called to do it, that I'm given what I need to do it. I think because I'm willing to deal with my own spiritual growth and foundation, I'm allowed every day to have the energy, the determination, the commitment, and the perseverance to try to, you know, help carry the message to other, especially these students. I mean, this is their second chance.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these kids are what we would have called throwaways. Some of them have been in prison. Some of them would never be back on a college campus. Some of them failed, you know, other schools. The opportunity to give them a second chance to succeed, the opportunity to get them a second chance to be who God intended for them to be before the drugs, before the chemicals, I can't imagine a better job.
We are here today talking with Kitty Harris, who is the director of the Center for the Study of Addiction and Recovery. And when you talk about your own calling, what's it like to see someone wake up and discover themselves in a new life?
It is, I think it's a transformative experience. That, and what is it like to watch that? It is about as good as it gets. To see that kind of the scales falling from your eyes, that you realize to look at the world and your life from a different perspective. There is never a day that I don't love to go to work. It's because I work in this building that's just full of miracles. I see miracles every single day. We have students that, you know, have GEDs that are graduating from Tech with 4 points.
Mm.
You know, and so you have these experiences of really seeing what transformation looks like.
David knows that I'm a Baptist.
Yes.
And yet, nonetheless, sometimes I even quote Catholic theologians. St. Irenaeus said, "The glory of God is a human being fully alive."
Oh.
And isn't it wonderful to see someone come back to life?
One of the things that I find the most exciting, maybe fulfilling, is to realize that we get to break that cycle of addiction. These students then go and marry and have children that don't have to live with a drunk dad or a drunk mom. And the willingness to be able for them to go out into the world and have families and work in jobs, and to really mirror the spiritual principles they've learned in recovery is a large contribution that we don't talk about a lot, but it's there.
When we return, I want to ask you, Dr. Harris, about your book, but I also want to ask you about something called the spirituality of imperfection.
Oh, yes. Okay.
You've been listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, hosted by Ryan Price and David Cruz, and brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. I'm Ryan Price, sitting here with David Cruz and our guest, Dr. Kitty Harris, who is director for the Center for the Study of Addiction and Recovery, and we are glad that you are here with us, Kitty.
Thank you, Ryan.
Curious if you had ever come across a beautiful little book written some years ago for people who worked in the field of addiction and recovery. The book is Spirituality of Imperfection, and I remember one of the things that the authors say is that it's our imperfections that allow God into our lives. Of course, you see a lot of wonderful things and joys and, of course, people in recovery and on that journey, which is a very sacred journey. But then you work with a lot of people that have imperfections, and you're in good company because we certainly model that imperfection. You find that sometimes we're squeamish about letting God see us in our imperfection or others. And so the struggle is overcoming shame or embarrassment, because the fact of the matter is we're all imperfect. It's the very imperfections where God works and God touches and heals and uses them for good. Talk a little bit about that.
I love the book. In 12-step recovery literature, you see the phrase, pain is the touchstone of all spiritual growth. And I think that's part of what I do believe, that sometimes you have to get, unfortunately, a little beaten up to realize where you need to grow and how you need to grow. But what you said, Father David, is so true, that sense of shame and guilt. There was a great book written years ago by John Bradshaw called The Shame That Binds Us, I think, something like that. And when you look at addiction and you look at recovery, if you look at the 12 steps, part of what the 12 steps really reflect is a list of making amends. Who do you need to make amends to, and then making those amends? And the purpose, I think, of those steps is to heal the shame. You know, these are the things I have done. You know, I am sorry. I would like to make amends to you for my imperfections, for the things in my life that have caused you pain. I do think that that ability to grow spiritually is fueled oftentimes by that shame and that sense of having to be kind of naked in front of God. If you look at the 12 steps, all of those principles are covered. In step 4 and 5, you make a list of all of your inventory, your moral inventory. And then you admit that to God and to yourself and to another human being. And when you talk about things like that, you begin to see that the spiritual underpinning of what it means to fully recover and become the person that, you know, that you were intended to be.
Someone who I know who had a relationship with you as a pastor here in this community in Lubbock, Jim Jackson, formerly a pastor in town and now pastor down in Houston, talks about the difficulty of bringing your shame to light and how scary that can be. How do you coach people to do that?
You know, that is a hard thing to do. And people really, when they look at working recovery programs, those are the things that they find the most frightening, is, you know, that ability, that willingness to have to really open themselves up to the darkness. And I think what you do with people like that is you encourage them to start building their faith kind of from scratch, where they begin to have faith, where they begin to believe that the God of their understanding is a gracious God, and that the people that they are associated with are people that will be forgiving. You know, when you look at addiction and you look at the pain that so much of it brings about, you know, that the things you need the most are grace and forgiveness. And recovery, the concept of recovery is so built around those principles. And I believe that, you know, by almost holding people's hands and walking them through that, I think is one thing that helps. I think another thing that helps is, you know, your own willingness as an individual to share your pain and your struggles and your fear. I think that fear is at the core of so much of what addiction is about. Bringing that out into the open, into the light, is really meaningful.
You are listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Ryan Price, along with David Cruz, and our guest today is Kitty Harris, director for the Center of the Study of Addiction and Recovery.
Kitty, we wanted to ask you about your wonderful book, Women and Recovery, Finding Hope. I'd like to know, who did you write it for? Why did you want to write it for them?
Interestingly enough, I would love to tell you that I had this passion and I went out to write this book. I was actually contacted and asked if I would be willing to write the book. And it probably wasn't.
You were drafted.
I was. It probably wasn't the book I would have chosen to write, because I really wanted to write one about adolescents and teenagers and young adults. But, you know, but I, actually my contract with Wiley & Sons has a clause for a second book, so that one still may get to come. But they wanted a book about women. And it, interestingly enough, it goes back to your comment a few minutes ago, to the idea that women in recovery suffer probably more than men for various obvious reasons from shame. You know, you talk about guys go out and have a beer and have a good time, and then they show up at home. Well, when you talk about women that go out and have a couple beers and party, and then they show up at home and dinner doesn't get ready, or the kids don't get their homework done or whatever, there's a huge amount of shame associated with that. And so the book was really written to talk about the fact that drinking among women is increasing dramatically, that drinking among young girls is increasing dramatically, that there are different types of drinkers now than we ever talked about before. There's a chapter in there that we call The Play Date, which is about, like, mom teeny moms is a kind of a catchphrase for moms that have play dates, and they all get together with their kids and they drink. And so the intent of the book was to show that drinking among women today in our culture has become a very dangerous thing and a very predominant activity, and that along with that, the recovery piece has got to be addressed a little bit differently also. That was the motivation.
And the finding hope. Talk to us about hope.
Well,
everyone needs hope.
That's right. Everybody needs hope. And that's the thing that I think recovery offers people, is hope. One of my very favorite spiritual people is St. Francis. And I actually start the book out with a quote from him. First you do what's necessary, then you do what's possible, and then you find yourself doing the impossible. And that's what recovery is. You get up, you make a decision that you're going to change your life, you don't take a drink, you go meet with people that know how to do it, or you go to treatment or whatever, and you do what you can do. And the next thing you know, you're living your life without the dependence on a chemical to be able to function. And hope, that whole concept of hope is about the realization that you, A, don't have to do it alone, and B, that there are many, many others that have gone before you that have been able to achieve the hope of living a healthy and sober life.
So hope is found in the footprints of other people who've walked the road ahead of you.
Yeah, absolutely. The footprints of others. And the fact that your higher power, your belief in God, allows you to believe in yourself to the point that you can overcome whatever struggles that you're having. Addiction is often characterized as a disease of denial. We all know that. But also of alienation and isolation. And so much a part of what recovery is about is the hope of finding a connectedness with others.
The irony of the St. Francis statement is that in recovery so often, your first step is to say, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And then yet the irony is that you're saying, eventually, yet I could do the impossible.
Absolutely. Because if you talk to people that are in recovery, and especially early in recovery, and you say, did you ever think that you'd go a year without a drink? Did you ever think you would go 2 years without a drink? And they will say, you know, no, I didn't think it was possible.
You've been listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, and we will be back here in just a few moments to continue our conversation with Kitty Harris, Director of the Center for the Study of Addiction and Recovery at Texas Tech.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, with your hosts Ryan Price and David Cruz. Brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
I'm Ryan Price, along with David Cruz, with our guest today, Dr. Kitty Harris, who is the director of the Center for the Study of Addiction and Recovery at Texas Tech University.
Kitty, I think your stories, all that you have to say about working with university students, of course, their struggles and their joys as well, reminded me just now of a professor I had in college who used to say at the beginning of the academic year, if you turn in your work and come to class, I will give you mercy. If you don't show up and don't do your work, I will give you justice. I know that, you know, being an educator, of course, it's a real gift from God. Mm-hmm. Those who can do it and do it well. What do you find meaningful about the classroom? And tell us something that you're teaching to students today to help them become better people, more wise and more productive people in our society.
I've done a lot of different things. I'm a clinician. I've worked at psychiatric hospitals. I've run the center program. I'm an associate dean in human sciences. So I've done a lot of things. But my passion is teaching. I've taught, since my senior year in college, I had the chance to team teach a class with my major professor, and so it's just part of who I am. But one of the things I am teaching this last semester that I love is I get to teach a class in the Honors College on communication, civility, and ethics. And when I tell people I'm teaching that, they're surprised it's not in the addiction field, but my background really is communications. My bachelor's and master's are in communications, and it addresses what you said, Father David, is that it's a class that helps, I think, students to become better people because we help them learn how to communicate and really express themselves. But my favorite part of the class is the unit on civility. And people say to me, oh my gosh, why isn't everyone taking that class? Or because we see a lot of uncivil behavior in our world today.
Amen.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so it's the opportunity to really communicate with these students what it means to be civil. Everything from as simple as opening a door for someone or holding a door for someone, speaking kindly of others, thinking kindly of others, and doing things that we have lost the day-to-day desire, information, teaching of that. And what's fascinating to me about it, and I think you both would appreciate this given your the title of your show, Faith Matters, is that with all the rules of civility that we look at, the one rule that the entire class always comes back to is the idea of the golden rule. And I had a presentation this last semester where one of my students went and found every single religion in the world and what reference they made to the rule similar to the Golden Rule. And I think it was a very impactful moment in the class, is that everyone realized that whatever your faith was, whatever your theology was, whatever your belief system was, that the underlying principle of living in the world with grace and mercy was to treat others as you would hope you would be treated. Being able to do that in a classroom of students is so enriching, because you feel like they walk out of there with something they can take into the world.
You started off and you're talking about things that, when we think of all of the world's problems, mm-hmm. whatever they may be, they're so astronomically sized, and yet you're talking about opening doors and thinking kindly of other people.
Right.
And that sort of ties back to what you were saying earlier, doing what you can today, one day at a time, and it builds.
Absolutely. If you think about the fact that we all impact people every single day, and that word of kindness, that act of courtesy, that statement of generosity or gratitude, that it impacts people's lives down the road that we'll never see, we'll never know. And it is a day at a time. We look at the world and we think, what can I do to change? This is a mess. And I think we forget, or we overlook, the fact that a hug, a pat on the back, a kind word, a moment of caring or compassion expressed can do an awful lot.
I've discovered that small acts of kindness and change me when I do them.
Right.
And that is where my character gets reshaped and reformed. It's hard to hate someone when you're praying for them.
Yes. And the older I get, the more I say, Ryan, that I sense that. It's not about what I'm going to do to help you. It's about what I'm doing, and it's actually going to make a huge impact on me. One of my very favorite things to do is to go to Sonic and order, a cherry lime, and the car hop comes out and, it's $2.15, and you hand them a $20 bill or a $50 bill, and they look at you like, are you serious? And you are, because it's just an act of generosity that allows that person to have been touched at a level that they probably haven't been touched at it quite some time.
I love the fact that you're teaching people about civility, because there's such a lack, in my eyes, of civility in this world. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the best example that I can give, although there are many, God knows there are many, are what we see in the breakdown of the political party system in our country, and how everything has become so polarized. And it seems like we deal in extremes. And then, again, we're not civil. There used to be a respect for office in our land.
Yeah.
Whether you like that person's political leanings or not, the sheer fact they held an office accorded them a level and degree of respect. Mm-hmm. And that was just the civility that is all as Americans we grew up with. And now there's such a breakdown in that. So kudos to you.
Thanks.
and to the university system for encouraging this conversation. It's absolutely necessary to have.
Well, thank you. And I would just like to say, in terms of the university too, that course happens to be on their core curriculum. So it is offered across campus. It's not specifically to a certain department or anything. And my kudos to them also. I think it should be a required course of every student that graduates.
Dr. Harris, the thought occurs to me that you are teaching students at Texas Tech University to be human.
Yeah,
and
I hope so.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
May your light shine brightly. You've been listening to Faith Matters, 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.